League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome back, everybody, to another year of the Sunday Podcast.
I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Back in 2025 for our fifth season. You can expect more of this.
He's claiming that he was ill before the semifinal, whatever. But, you know, I just feel like at that point he was just looking for attention.
And some of this.
And you normally say no human is limited. So I can't limit myself, or I can't just say I can do.
As well as event coverage around all the major races on the UK circuit.
And if you're a fan of the pod, please give us a rating and review on your preferred podcast streaming service.
And if you want to stay up to date with all the latest news, give us a follow on Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
As always, thanks for listening. See you next time. And we hope you enjoyed the episode.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode. And this week we have a very, very special guest in Frederick Rupert. I hope I haven't butchered the pronunciation of your name there. But what was the story of the summer, really? I mean, that matchup against Alba Cali in the Diamond League earlier in the year and running 8:01 to see a European do that after a short while since McKeesey and we saw Bob Tari back in the day as well. But we were just talking off air. I mean, you didn't see it coming yourself. Yeah, you must be still over the moon with that performance.
Yeah, true. Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be here, featured in the podcast. Yeah, it was surprising for myself as well. I mean, I knew I've made big progress in training, but I didn't see anything close to 8 minutes coming.
Have you been able to pinpoint it, that performance, of perhaps why you ran so well on that night? You know, chatting with the coaches, reflecting yourself?
I mean, it was, like, for me, it was a perfect race. It was so stretched, the field. We have gone for such a high pace that I had so much space to run with a nice technique, which is a big factor in steeple. And I mean, honestly, I had to make a decision pretty early into the race. And I wanted to take a risk and stick with the African pack. And I think that was like the turning point. It was pretty early, but that was the point that changed the race for me.
I agree with that. I mean, when I watched it, you just looked so strong. I think you sat back for maybe 600 meters or so of that race. And then there was like a key breakaway and you got on it. And is that a move that perhaps you wouldn't have taken 12 months prior? And we often see it, don't we? A lot of Europeans, they don't quite go sometimes with that early pace. They like to just sit back and pick people off a little later on. So is there an element of bravery that was required to get the best out of yourself on that day?
Yeah, exactly. I think that was like the main point which made me run so fast. Like probably we are very shy. Like we don't trust in our skills and like prefer to run a little defensive in Europe. Like, as I said, I didn't have anything to lose coming into this race. And I thought, why not take the risk? And that was the turning point. Like, we went through in 2K very fast. I think I clocked like 5:23. And I still felt all right because I was just hanging on to the train. And that made me feel pretty good. And yeah, like 12 months ago, I think I wouldn't have done it like this.
No, it was an inspired performance, and you almost spoiled Alba Cali's party, to be honest, in his home country. Did he have any passing comments for you after the race?
No. He didn't. I think he was pretty surprised as well. Like, nobody has seen that coming. Like, me finishing second into this race, chasing him down on the last lap, it was unreal.
Yeah, this is it. And Let's rewind a little bit. We've got so much to sort of break down how you got to that point. But I think the steeplechase is a unique event in itself. And it's an event that actually you've been doing for a long, long time. European under 23 champion, 6 years ago now. Why the steeplechase? How did you get into it?
That was a pretty long story. Like in the youth years for the German championships, we had steeplechase and all the middle distance events. And my coach and me, we were a little scared to run like two races in 2 days, like being 17 years old. It's probably a little different to the approach in the UK, but we were scared. And that's why we chose steeple, because it was just the final event. And that worked out pretty well for me. I finished like third in my first race. And then we stick to it. Like some years I raced many steeplechase race, but like when I turned 19 or 20, I got more and more problems like with my hips from the technique. And then I took a little break, like 2 or 3 years, and I returned. And now it's like the main distance for me.
So did you have that break post European under 23s? Or so you have that sort of break around COVID and around the pandemic time, or was it before your under 23 success?
It was before, like
right.
From when I was 20 mm-hmm. to 22. I started when I was 22. So that was exactly the year when I won the under 23s. And like coming into this competition, I didn't do any steeple like 2 years. So the first race, I raced without any practice.
When you say without any practice, do you mean literally without any practice? Like you didn't jump a hurdle, or you just the fact you didn't do a steeple race leading in?
No, I didn't jump anything like 2 years long. And then I raced the first race, got the qualifier, and then I practiced coming into the under 23s.
And that's purely down to fear of getting injured?
Yeah, that was it.
So you're a natural. Do you think the steeplechase is an event where you kind of have it or you don't? You need to show signs of promise early on.
Yeah, you do. Of course.
Yeah.
It's pretty unique, as you said. You need to try out. You need to be pretty tough. And it's many, many factors.
But now your technique looks impeccable. You spoke about it then, having a clear run, being able to sight the barriers. You are so smooth over the hurdles. Was your technique always that way, or have you worked on it since?
We have worked on it like a little bit, mm-hmm. but it has always been better when I had space. Okay. Coming into Turku, my technique was pretty bad on the first laps because we were so packed. So I tend to need space, you know? Mm-hmm. My arms, they get around a little bit, and it's harder if you have a guy sitting next to you. So yeah, that was, like I said, for me, it was perfect to just be in one row lined up. I had space. I was the last one in the pack from the first pack. That was amazing.
How do you adjust your technique going into a major championship, knowing that perhaps you won't have space in a major championships?
It's a hard question. usually, I get out a little bit to like lane two to have a better sight and have more space. But I just don't like to be like in the inside, having too many people around me. I feel uncomfortable.
Yeah. That's interesting. And so coming into that, actually, let's stay where we were. We were kind of, you know, moving forward from your under 23 success. And I think with the steeplechase, something which always interests me is, do you ever get tired as an athlete of people looking at your flat times and overanalyzing your flat times and judging you off what you can do over the 5,000, over the 1,500 when you're a formidable chaser?
Well, kind of, but I always think to these people, they can try steeple as well. It's not for everyone. So I know that it's hard for a steeplechaser to keep up with people running flat good times. I mean, I've seen it at the European team champs now. It's another breed, I would say. So that's kind of true, but it doesn't mean that these guys can run steeplechases.
Yeah.
It's just a different discipline.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think someone who is so good over the steeple can run 8 minutes for a steeplechase can't go and run a 13-minute 5K?
Oh, no idea, really. I mean, I wouldn't say I can't. Maybe I can.
Yep.
I think I'm not far off from it. But, well, it's maybe even because we don't have time to run this many flat races because we are busy running steeplechase races. And as you know from your brother, maybe, you need some time to recover from these races. It's a little different to racing flat races. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen it now. It took me maybe like 2 days and I was back to double thresholds. In a steeple race, I have like pain in my muscles from the uplifting from your legs. It's just different.
That recovery time off the back of a steeplechase, I mean, would you say 4 or 5 days?
Yeah, probably.
Probably around there.
I mean, you can probably do some light tempo sessions, but it's not that you can immediately go back to normal training. For me, it's not.
Because one of the things people will say about you is they'll go, your conversion between your flat 3000 and your steeple is incredible. Is it, have you got it now, I guess officially, is it like 18 seconds or something between your 3K PB and your steeple?
Yeah, it was like, I think 15 seconds, but to put it a little bit in context, it was a pretty poor race. I just did one indoor race.
Yep.
and I hate indoor racing. It's not good for my stride. So it's probably not that, it's not probably not what I'm capable of. Mm. So I think I can go a lot faster. I'm probably not like the world best, but I can go a lot faster than 7.46 on the 3K flat.
No, I imagine you can. One of the questions I was going to ask is, I guess, is there like a golden rule for the conversion? Like, is there, you know, if you know you're in X shape for 3000, you're like, okay, that's going to convert to a steeple. Or does that not really exist when you're looking at
what? I think it's pretty individual.
Mm-hmm.
For me, probably like 25 seconds, I would say. But it's not because I'm a very good technician. It's more because the stride for the slower pace, it fits me better.
Yeah, you're basically saying you're more efficient when you're running 63s, 64s.
Yes, exactly. The 61s or 62s, it's a different thing.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So off the back of under 23s, great success there. And then you start to just progress steadily with your coach. And then you have that breakout, I guess another breakout performance in 2022 when you run 8:15 and you go to Eugene and you go to that major championship. So I guess, what did you learn that year? Because 8:15, even now it's an amazing time, but in 2022, it was probably carried even higher weighting. But obviously you go to the major championships and you struggle in the heat. And there's a big difference between running an 8:15 in perfect conditions and trying to compete at that level when you get to a major.
Yeah, true. The year 2022, it teached me a lot. Like I had very, very big problems like in the winter time. I was injured for a pretty long time. And like my preparation for the race in Tokyo in 2022, it was just like 3 months. And I ran 8:15 off of it. And yeah, it was a big wave in Germany. Everyone was looking at me. It was like the first one to run sub 8:20 for over 20 years in Germany. So it was quite a big thing. And then I kind of lost the focus, or me and the coach, we were doing many things wrong, in my opinion, like looking back now. And so I kind of lost my base, which was not big. As I said, it was 3 months. So I lost it pretty quick and was really, really bad for me in the world champs and also in the Europeans. I struggled a lot. But I decided to go on in this coach and athlete setting. But after the following year, which was even worse, I changed it. So coming into the 2024 season, I changed coaches. And this is probably one of the main things which made me more consistent as well.
Who was your previous coach, and what did the setup look like?
My previous coach was a local coach, like 40 minutes from my home.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Harald Eifert. And yeah, it was like the setting was like very familiar for me. Like it was a small club, many friends of mine, and yeah, it was probably not as professional as it is now, but very, very many middle distance runners were also there. So I did a lot of middle distance training as well. And this has led to probably me losing a lot of endurance over the season. Like the preparation, it has always been packed. And then over the season, we started doing a lot of fast stuff. And I kind of lost shape.
Because what's interesting, you ran 8:15 in 2022 and you ran 8:15 in 2024, but there was probably two very different approaches there. So when you run 8:15 in 2024, what's giving you the confidence to be like, okay, I've matched what I did 2 years ago, but I still haven't managed to push on yet?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen my results in training. It was a lot different. And I think like from what I know now, I probably would have raced a lot faster last season if I had like a race with a different setting like I had now. I think I had the shape to run like 8:09 or 8:10 last year as well.
Yeah.
But like the consistency, it was on a whole different level. I think I raced like four races. They were between 8:15 and 8:17. And that gave me a lot of confidence.
And you started to win the German championships as well. You started to really compete. I guess the fourth at the Europeans as well, which was very, very close. Performances like that must have, been giving you some good confidence.
Yeah, it did. And also the Olympics where I missed the final by like 0.03 seconds. It was so close. But that was like a booster, a motivation for me, because I've seen I'm so close to this step and I need to work a little bit harder and I can do it. And that was one of the main things that drove me through this winter.
So I'm intrigued to just dive into the training a little bit more and get those comparisons. So, you know, 2022, you're running 15 and then you just work on your speed too much. So what did that summer, I guess, look like? What training were you doing, which you think was just, it was just impacting you not in the right way going into a major champs?
Yeah, it was like the miles, the overall miles, it was not enough. We did like a few weeks with, I can only say it in kilometers because we don't measure in miles. It was like 50K or 70K.
Right.
And that's completely different to now. We are just trying to get back into the base thing between the competitions. And this is helping me a lot. So we did a lot of speed stuff, not enough kilometers. And that just led to me losing the endurance.
And how are those kilometers made up then? And how are they made up now? I guess the extra Ks you're doing now, is that just easy volume or is it that double threshold which you weren't doing before? Or were you?
I think the main part is probably the double threshold because we did, like before I did many double like easy days as well, but we have never done double like threshold or double fast running. We just did double easy days. So the interval days were always just once. So one training and that's it. So now it's a lot more kilometers in one day. Like on the double threshold days, it's probably around 3K every day. So it's a lot more than just 6 or 7 fast kilometers on a day. And it's a big difference for me.
Yeah, that's a massive difference. In and around that double threshold, why do you think you specifically respond so well to it? Because you have responded extremely well.
Yeah.
And you think double threshold really complements the steeplechase as well, clearly.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I kind of think I'm built for endurance training. So I've realized pretty quick that my endurance, like even the results from testings, they were probably better than from 80 or 90% of the other runners. So that is, I knew if I can do more mileage, it will complement my shape. And I think it's good for steeple as well, because if you're used to run a high pace for a long time, you can stay just relaxed for longer in the race. And for the steeple, it's so important to stay relaxed, like even if it's just for half of the race, but then it's like just 1.5K to go and you could always do 1.5K.
It's a great quote. What training do you do to basically be able to cope with the fatigue of hurdling and obviously the water jumps as well?
I never train water jumps actually. It's just just in competitions. But for hurdling, it's probably like longer intervals, like 1K repeats with 5 hurdles in a, like the normal approach for,
yeah.
If you race, you have 5 hurdles. So we place 5 hurdles and then 1K repeats at a pretty fast pace, a little slower than like race pace, I would say, with short breaks. And yeah, you get used to it pretty quick.
And will you do that during the winter?
Not at all. In winter, we just did threshold work.
Right. Yeah. And then just some Ks, what, 4 or 5 of those in the summer?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Very simple.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it is very simple. Kind of make up their minds. How can I get better? But it's actually simple. You just need to get in the mileage and don't get injured. And that's why I think that is why double threshold work is working so well, because people keep in control and they don't get injured. And it's what gets you better. Like, the consistency.
Yeah, no, I think that is one of the big successes of double threshold. Just, yeah, like you say, people are actually able to train more than they ever have. So yeah, so nothing revolutionary with the training there.
No.
So
not at all.
Yeah, I guess that's disappointing from my side.
Why?
No, it's not. I'm only joking. But, you know, we love to hear some unique and quirky methods of training on a podcast. But no, let's talk about German athletics and the setup in Germany, because being a UK-based podcast, everyone listening will know how the UK operates and how they select their teams and stuff like that. But what support, if any, do you get from German athletics? And what have German athletics done to really kind of maximize and support German athletes at the highest level, because we're starting to see more and more Germans and just more and more Europeans in general just perform on an international stage now, which is exciting.
Yeah, I don't think it's up to the federation, honestly. I mean, I'm pretty lucky. I have we have in Germany the chance to get into the army or the police, and I'm in the army, so basically I'm a soldier, but my my training is my job. So I don't know the exact name for it, like how we'd call it, but we have some spots for the top athletes, and they can go to the army or go to the police, and they get paid and they can do their training. So we don't have to worry about getting paid or money. That is like a big up.
Yeah.
But I've been in there for like 6 years already, so it's huge and like the biggest support I have had. So that's pretty nice. But other than that, it's not much up to the federation, I think. I think it's just because people, like, they get more knowledge about training.
Yeah.
Like, the approaches, and we have many athletes training in the US as well, like Robert Falken or Lea Meyer. That's probably up to them as well. But it's not much the federation in my eyes. Just like the spots for the army and the police, they are really important, and we have many, many professional athletes who got spots there.
When you joined the army, did you have to go through basic training? Like, was there a year you almost had to just write off because you were, or did you just join and start running?
No, we had to, but it was just 4 weeks. So it
four
was
weeks.
Very, very less than usually. Usually it's 3 months, and for us it was 4 weeks. So 4 weeks to the army, and you could not really train a lot there. And then you got back to normal training back home, and you can just do your stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it's very, very nice.
And is there a clock on it? Like, have you got 4 more years in the army, or do they tell you how long you've got left, how long you can be on this program?
Yeah, that's the bad thing. These are contracts for 1 year. So if you perform bad, you get out.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh, but that's the reality.
Wow. Have you ever, I guess you've been, you said you've been in it 6 years, so you've never had that problem.
Yeah, but like coming off the year 2023, I was like close to the edge. And then I changed all the programs and stuff. And since then, it's just going up.
And that was all your decision. It was all your decision to leave your current coach. And now you're coached by, is it Dieter Baumann or?
It's his wife.
His wife. So, yes. Yeah. And that was your decision to reach out to them and work with them.
Yeah, exactly. I knew I had to change something. And then before somebody would tell me where to go, I wanted to choose myself. And I chose to contact her.
Yeah.
And she was not pretty happy at first, but she agreed to help me, and it has worked out pretty well now. And I think now, looking back, she's happy that she did it.
Why wasn't she too keen at first?
I mean, she didn't really know me.
Yeah.
Like, I knew her because she is in the federation as well. Like, she's one of the national coaches, but she has never done the steeplechase. She just did the long distance. But I liked her approach of training, and I knew many athletes who were training with her. And so I contacted her. And I know from that point, or at this moment, and now as well, she has had many, many athletes. So one more is always like, she has to think of who she wants to coach. And so it was pretty lucky for me.
That's fascinating. She never coached, obviously, steeple as well. And I guess, did you make that easy for her in a sense? You were like, well, look, I don't need to train this.
No, she had some steeplers before, but she didn't do it in the national team. That's what I wanted to say. She had some steeplers,
right,
but it was some years ago.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I see. Yeah. And obviously, you know, it's been all success since you started working with her. There is some bad press about them. You know, obviously the drugs related ban that they had in maybe the 90s or something like that. Did that put you off? And are they seen in a negative light in Germany?
It depends. I think probably no, but there are always people saying bad things or negative about it. But I don't think like overall they are in a negative light. I mean, she's probably one of the biggest coaches in Germany, and everyone knows that she does great work because all of the athletes keep improving. I don't think like in the athletics world that they are in a negative light, but Yeah, press-wise, like 20 years ago, obviously, yes.
Yeah. What do you know of it? Were you aware of that when you were reaching out, or did you not really know it? Because obviously, yeah, I guess we were 2 or 3 years old.
I knew about the headline of it, but I didn't know the exact story. But there is a podcast in Germany about it where they were talking about the whole investigation and like how it turned out. And for me, it was like from the moment I've heard it, it was clear. I don't think that they have taken it like by knowledge. It must have been either from somebody else or they didn't know it. So yeah, for me, it didn't make any difference.
And my next question off the back of all of this is doping a criminal offense in Germany? I read that somewhere, but I'm not sure if that is the case currently.
I have no idea, actually. I don't know. I've never made any thoughts about it.
I mean, yeah, obviously not. No, I just wondered if athletes were aware of that. I mean, that's what I read on an article somewhere, but it might be spoof.
I mean, it could be. We have laws for everything, so probably yes.
Yeah, fair enough. And then I guess just on the coaching setup, then training partners, location, what does that look like for you?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm training at home. Most of the time I'm training alone. Like, I live in the western part of Germany, and my coach and the team, they live in South Germany. It's like 4.5 or 5 hours from me.
Wow.
And I just drive down sometime, like every 2 or 3 months for 1 week. And then I train there with a 5K runner from Germany, Maximilian Torwart.
Yep.
He has run 13:10. On the 5K, so pretty decent runner. And, also, there's another guy who joined us recently. It's Niels Vogt. I don't know if you've heard about him. He has the personal best of 27:30 in the 10K.
And you guys,
so that's the team.
You guys have got a nice little squad.
It's pretty good actually, because for me it's fitting perfectly, because I can do the faster stuff with Max and the longer stuff with Niels. It's really good.
Yeah, and will your winter look, you know, will your training look pretty similar then?
I think so, yeah. I think it's pretty similar, except from the point that Max is not a fan of double threshold. He likes to just do one session a day. But Niels and me, we like the higher volume.
Yeah, you respond much better to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you a question here about the Kenyans and how they're not as competitive as they once were, the Kenyan athletes. And if you had any, do you have any thoughts and ideas why perhaps they're not as competitive? You know, just Kenyans, East Africans in general aren't as dominant when it comes to steeplechase, an event that they loved and they were very proud to be good at.
Maybe they focus too much on the flat distances. I have no idea. I know that the Kenyans love the steeplechase, like especially the people from Kenya. They love to watch it, and I think they are kind of sad they lost their dominance, but I have no idea what's the reason behind it. I mean, maybe it's going to change in the next years again, but for now it's Morocco on the first spot, and we have to wait till he's going to be beaten in a big competition, I think.
Well, I guess the threat is growing with yourself and Kenneth Rooks and people like that. And on that, I mean, 13 men have broken 8 minutes in the steeple, and they've all been African. Can a European, can a European break this mark? How's your training comparing now compared to when you ran 8:01? Because obviously you've got Monaco next week.
We didn't change anything in training. Like, we stick to the same principles, and I think that's good. And yes, I think 8 minutes can be broken for a non-African. But speaking of me, it's not my goal for this year. But on the long run, yes, definitely. I mean, if you run 8:01, what should be my next goal? It has to be sub-8. So yes, for the future, it definitely is a goal for me. And I think it's possible. But probably we have to wait.
The Diamond Leagues, are they a relatively new thing for you at this level? You know, off the back of Rabat now, and now it's Monaco. Will this be your first time in Monaco? Have you competed there before?
I've just competed there for the road race, for the 5K road race, twice now, but not in the stadium.
So it'll be a special occasion for you, because you know the Monaco Diamond Leagues are a bit of a bucket list for most athletes.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm kind of sad that Bakali's not there, or Girma. Yeah, I mean, yeah. These are the guys that make races pretty fast, and I don't see myself in the position to make the race fast. I want to hang on, just like I did in Rabat.
Yeah.
So we have to see who's going to pick up the pace.
Yeah. And talk about your goals for the season then now, off the back of such an early season success. You say it's not to break 8 minutes. What are you hoping for at the World Championships?
At first, I want to qualify for the final. I haven't done it for all of my big competitions yet, so that's the first goal. And then I think for the final, it's an open competition. I think everything is possible in a final, in a World Champs final. I mean, we've seen it from Kenneth Rooks last year. He was the complete underdog and placed second. And we've seen in the China Diamond League, Bakali is also beatable, so we have to wait what's happening. I'm not putting myself into the position for a medal. I think it's too early. I need to prove myself first. But I want to just do my best there, have a good position. And yeah, that's a goal for the season. It's too early to talk about medals. I know everybody wants to hear it, but it's too early for me.
Yeah, it's fair. And obviously, you've got some good competition in Germany as well, with Bemmendorf running so well. You know, you two really are heading up Europe at the moment.
Yes, that's true. I mean, we've been in this competition for many years now, but we just keep improving, both of us. And it's quite exciting to see, but it's also like, I don't know, also a bit frustrating because whenever you take a step, the other one's taking a step as well. I mean, good for us in the world and in Europe, we're pretty good now. And I think he's one to watch out for at the Monaco Diamond League as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's finish with some quickfire questions. These are a bit of fun for you, but what's the worst thing? Yeah, what's the worst thing you've ever read about yourself on the internet?
Yeah, probably all of the doping accusations after Rabat.
How in tune with that were you? You know, did you load up Twitter and see all these accusations straight away? Were you getting atted and stuff?
I didn't even react. I just read it and recognized it. And then it was like, okay, out of my head again.
Yeah.
Because I know, I mean, if people talk bad about you, you have obviously had success. So it's also a thing that motivates me. And I mean, I know I've worked hard for it and I know I didn't do anything forbidden. So.
Yeah.
No worries about that.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a tough thing to.
Yeah, it was. But as I said, it's okay now. I have to stick with it. And people will always say negative things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And do you have a favorite athlete on the circuit? I wonder if anyone inspired you when you were growing up.
Yeah, probably Hisham El Gurush.
Really? He's your goat. He's the man you look up to.
Yeah, I think he's the goat. I mean, running 3:26 and with all the good competitive 1500 meter runners now, they still didn't touch his world record. Pretty amazing.
Do you think they will?
I think in the future, yes, but not this year.
All right. Yeah. Fair comment. And then if you could change one thing about running, what would it be?
Wow. that you have to do so much volume to get better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's especially given what you've gone through the last couple of years. That's fair. I mean, how much just before we end, then how much volume are you currently at? Like even now through the summer, has that changed? Are you at less volume now than you were in the winter, or have you just tried to keep it stable all year?
Oh no, it's a little bit less.
Right,
but I raced on Sunday this week, and my flight back was on Monday. So obviously Monday was not perfect for training. And I think this week it will be around 140 or 145K. But in the preparation, I've done like many weeks around 160. Like my coach is always saying like 100 miles is the goal.
That's the goal. Yeah. And how much?
160.
Yeah, 160. And do you put quite a lot of importance on that then? You need to hit 160 for the week.
It's pretty, like even for my mind. It's pretty important for me to know I feel good. And like I've seen the training results, they've been the best since I've done high volume training weeks. So yeah, between 155 and 160 is kind of perfect for me, I think.
Do you know what though, like as a coach, I'm intrigued to know what the transition was like to get up to that. Because, you know, you talk about being a low mileage guy prior.
Yeah.
you've almost doubled your mileage, you know, or you've definitely laid on a good
in summer.
But even in winter, there must have been a 20% increase or a 25% increase in quite a in quite a short period of time. But your body handled it because the intensity was a lot lower.
Exactly, I think that's the key point. At my former coach, I've done like 130, 125 in winter, and then the last season we went to doing 135 to 140, and like my highest volume week in training camp before the Paris Olympic Games was 155. And then after the season, we just started to make this the normal week.
I understand why. Well, it's been an insightful podcast. And I guess just finally as well, do you have any pre-race rituals, any pre-race tunes that you listen to? What do you do on race day?
I'm a pretty weird guy, I would say, on race day. I never leave the hotel. I just go to breakfast and go to lunch, and then I just wait. And like 1 hour before the shuttle, I start to get up, pack my stuff, take a shower, and listen to music, and that's it. So pretty simple, kind of weird, because people keep asking me on race day, what's the weather like? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm inside.
Do you feel like you need to contain yourself? You need to just like contain yourself in your hotel room, let the energy build up. Is that why?
I don't know why I do this. I've done it and I just kept it. There's no special reason behind it. It's just the way I behave on race day.
Wow. Well, there you go. There you go. There's the secrets. But it's been a fantastic podcast, Freddie. And it's inspiring seeing a European tackle that 8-minute barrier. And whether you do it this year or next year, it'll be exciting to see you continue to develop, because you're still, I guess, young in steeple terms. You're 28 years old. You must still be looking at LA and possibly even beyond that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the target for me. I think 3 years, it should be easy, maybe even more. We will see how much my body can take, but 3 years for sure. LA is a big goal for me, and looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.